talk something, to speak something about real charity and humanitarian welfare work. I'll start by telling you a story that we were at an airport with Srila Prabhupada. I don't remember which airport, but Prabhupada was sitting, devotees were sitting, waiting for a plane, and different things were going on. And then some devotees gave Srila Prabhupada some prasadam, which Prabhupada accepted. And he said, now distribute what was left. So the devotee who had the prasadam was kind of a little bit confused at first, because there was the airport and there were people there and there were devotees sitting there. So he didn't know which Prabhupada meant. So he asked Prabhupada, distribute to the people, Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, no, to the devotees. And Prabhupada said, charity begins at home. So we learn, or we've been discussing that over the last few days, that simply to give little highs. Is the sound a little high today? Or is it okay? It's okay? It's okay. All right. No, it's fine then. If it's okay, we won't mess with it. No, just keep it. We've been discussing the last few days that there's no particular greatness to doing charitable work for people in general in terms of bodily welfare and mundane needs. That may be all right for a person who's not Krishna conscious. At least let him do some pious activity. But Krishna consciousness is far beyond such pious work, which Srila Prabhupada therefore described as the business of cats and dogs, useless, false, cheating, and so on. But that same kind of service, when rendered to Vaishnavas, is of a different caliber. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, Anchi Lila, 13th chapter, Lord Chaitanya was instructing Raghunath Bhatt, who later became Raghunath Bhatt Goswami, that he should not stay with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but should return home. Lord Chaitanya said, when you return home, serve your aged father and mother, who are devotees, and try to study Srimad Bhagavatam from a pure Vaishnava who has realized God. So, Vridha Mata Pitar Jai Kadaha Shevan. You go and serve your parents. And Srila Prabhupada comments. He advised Raghunath Bhatt to serve his mother and father because they were both Lord Chaitanya's devotees. Anyone who wishes to advance in Krishna consciousness must try to serve the devotees of Krishna. As Narottam Das Thakur says, Chariya Vaishnava Seva Nishtar Pechekeva. Without serving a self-realized Vaishnava, no one has ever been released from the materialistic way of life. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would never have advised Raghunath Bhatt to serve ordinary parents, but since his parents were Vaishnavas, the Lord advised him to serve them. And then Srila Prabhupada comments, you know, why not serve ordinary parents? And he discusses that for a while. And then he quotes from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, one should perform only those activities, either worldly or prescribed by Vedic rules and regulations, which are favorable for cultivation of Krishna consciousness. And Prabhupada cites that as a verse confirming the uselessness of serving ordinary parents. Now, let's move ahead a little bit. Yes. Then Raghunath Das Bhatta did that. He continually rendered service to his mother and father for 4 years, and he also regularly studied Srimad Bhagavatam from a self-realized Vaishnava. Then his parents died at Kashi, Varanasi, and he became detached. He therefore returned to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, giving up all relationships with his home. So it's my proposition, therefore, that real charity should be directed, first of all, to our own devotees. We've staged large-scale programs for high-profile efforts to save the needy, to help those who are stricken by disaster. But what about our own people? Charity, I didn't quote it, but it's in the collection, those who've received the files. There are many, many places in Srimad Bhagavatam where Srila Prabhupada explains the charity should be given to the Brahmins and the Vaishnavas. There is charity in three modes of nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance. Charity should actually be given to Brahmins and Vaishnavas. Giving charity to useless people, that is, to people who are drunkards and so on, is charity in ignorance. Charity and goodness is given to Brahmins and Vaishnavas, not to ordinary men. Now, as far as our own history of these things, so let me see. I've got one other place that I wanted to look at. Yeah, I'm sure I do. And I skipped over it. Maybe. Hold on. Yeah, I'll come to it later. As far as the history, there's one of the first devotees who needed some medical attention was Pradyumna. He had needed a hernia operation in 1969, way back in the old days. And Srila Prabhupada wrote to Satsrup Maharaj, who was the president of the Boston temple where Pradyumna was staying, "I am enclosing here with one letter from Pradyumna, and you can let me know what is to be done for his hospital charges. We are increasing our expansion, but we have to take account of these emergencies. I have already written you about taking steps for protecting our boys from the draft board, military draft. Now, when we live together, somebody may fall ill. Now, find some future main source of income for our institution, and main source is publications. So if we can organize a good sales organization, that is our main hope. Anyway, I'm skipping. Please think over what is to be done with Pradyumna." That's March 1969. There was another letter, 1974, to, I think, another temple president, Sukadev. "One of the symptoms of a devotee is that he is kind. So if our godbrother becomes ill, it is our duty to help him get the proper medicine and treatment so that he can recover. Recently, our Giriraj became chronically ill in India and had to return to the U.S. for proper medical treatment. There in our Los Angeles center, he was given his own room and was able to recuperate comfortably. And now he has returned to his full duties in Bombay. Now, Tamal Krishna Goswami has just had a successful hernia operation, which was arranged free of charge at one of the most modern hospitals. And there is also a girl devotee undergoing operation there also. Tamal Krishna is now living in a room at our temple. The devotees see that he gets all facility, a hospital bed, proper prasadam, and personal care and visiting. So there is no question of ill-treating our own godbrothers simply because they are sick, nor should you allow such neglect to go on. So long we have this material body, there will be sickness, but we have to remain on the transcendental platform nonetheless." Yes, so that gives Prabhupada's instructions. There was also a letter, which I don't think I'll read, to a Mr. Keene, who is apparently the father of a devotee in Boston in 1972. And apparently this gentleman wrote to Srila Prabhupada to the effect that devotees were being neglected, that they didn't have proper blankets and clothing and so on. And Prabhupada wrote back quite a lengthy letter, saying that these boys and girls have understood what is austerity and the difference between spirit and matter, which is the highest knowledge of existence, because they're engaged in serving Krishna in this way, you have nothing further to worry. Their position in life is very secure and sound, because they are going back to Godhead, back home, without any doubt. Though they may be dressed in rags, still they are more exalted than kings. Nevertheless, I do not know how serious is the actual situation at Boston Temple or at other temples, but I am sending copies of your letter to all ISKCON centers, and I am requesting the officers in charge in those places to do the needful, as you are suggesting. Yes, if there is anything cold weather, the students should be sufficiently dressed, and they should not work under such conditions that they will fall ill. Everything should be managed in a nice way so that no one is dissatisfied and everyone keeps their energy, health and energy fit for serving Krishna 24 hours. And Srila Prabhupada ends in a typical way for him in his mood as a sannyasi. He says, "Thank you very much for your kind attention. I hope that everything is rectified to your satisfaction. You have got a daughter who has now become devotee of Krishna. Therefore, I can understand that you are also a very nice person. Everyone related to any devotee of Krishna becomes also great in our estimation. Therefore, I beg your assistance in this matter by giving something donation towards our temples, or especially the Boston Temple, for purchasing cloth and medicine and other things for the devotees there. If there is any further complaint, you may please address me at any time, and I will try to rectify the matter." That's January 1973. So it's clear that Srila Prabhupada did take these matters as worthy of serious attention. In fact, every religious community does have such responsibilities. When the members give their full dedication for serving the mission, then the mission itself incurs some obligations. Those obligations can become substantial. We have our youthful men, and they serve and they go out and they do everything with full energy. But if they stay around long enough, then they become less productive. They become perhaps at some point useless actually for doing any tangible work. Or even our younger men may sometimes become unproductive financially or in other senses. So then that's a challenge to us. Do we accept your service as long as you're healthy and strong? And then when you're no longer an asset, do we cast you aside? Or do we assume some responsibility in the matter? The Roman Catholic Church in America has recently been, recently means over the last several years, has been somewhat overtaken by the size of its obligations, because they have a large force of priests and nuns who've been very dedicated over decades and decades. But their congregation is shrinking. And therefore, and then the priests and nuns are aging and the congregation is shrinking. So they've been facing large financial pressures or burdens in that regard. And, you know, ISKCON is a small organization. This is a vast organization, so they have so many people like that. So we're smaller. Our responsibilities are also smaller. But I can imagine, if we're negligent in the future, that as we're seeing lawsuits now for negligence of, for neglecting to give proper care to children, we may in the future see lawsuits from elderly devotees speaking about things like implied contracts and so on. Does that sound right to you, dear Govinda Prabhu? It will come quickly. And of course, Prabhupada cited the examples of Giriraj Maharaj, Tamal Krishna Maharaj, and I think I can assure you with full confidence that any of our senior prominent men will be taken care of very well. Our sannyasis, our GBC men, and very substantial leaders of the society. The question that really arises is how well we'll take care of everyone else. Our history has not always been wonderful. I can cite you names and stories. I don't think I'll tell horror stories this morning, but I could. There are some rich ones of devotees who were in difficulty and were shunted from temple to temple and so on because, you know, we just can't do much. You know, we're sorry. We wish we could do something. Or, you know, you're a hypochondriac. I know one devotee who was a hypochondriac going from temple to temple, saying that something was wrong with him until he finally died of cancer. So these things are there. How we've addressed these problems so far, don't mind if I say these discouraging things. Is that all right? You're not going to be discouraged. You're going to be strong. Okay. Let's see. Moving back a little bit. Right. On the side of our governing body, there hasn't been much attention to this matter. There's been, although it's been interesting, at recent GBC meetings, I think there's been more talk about this, which is, I think, reflects the demographics of the GBC members. That is, they're getting older, so they're talking about these things. We do have a health and welfare ministry whose existence is pretty much symbolic. There was a cynical GBC resolution passed some years back and repealed 1 year later, which set forth the principle that every Vaishnav should be concerned about the welfare of every other Vaishnav, but that no one could expect ISKCON to assume any responsibility in the matter, and that this principle should be enshrined in the ISKCON constitution. So apparently members thought better of that because they repealed the resolution the following year. I think they probably recognize that ISKCON does bear some larger responsibility in the matter. Something has been done about a widow's ashram in Vrindavan. I don't know how much has been done, but I do know that there is such an ashram and that there are allotments to it, and there is some attention given to seeing that it does what it's supposed to do. How well that attention has, what that attention has resulted in, I'm just not up to date on. But I know that there is at least recognition that the need is there, and there has been some attention given to doing something. Prithu Prabhu for some time arranged for a hospice in Vrindavan, which was a very good service and a service which was used. And our Bhaktivedanta Hospital is also doing commendable work for the welfare of devotees. As I mentioned the other day, it's not an ISKCON project, but Krishna Chandra Prabhu, and who's like the main driving force behind the project, and Raghunath Prabhu, who's the hospital administrator, and the devotee doctors there, have made it one of their objectives of the hospital to render service to the ISKCON devotees. How to do that, of course, is a daunting task because you're running a hospital that has to break even. If you render free service to everyone, your hospital fills up all of its beds and you can't bring in an income anymore, and you're busy spending on the devotees who've come from all over the world to get free medical care. So they're facing the question of precisely how to render that service. They're talking about starting a foundation that would cover the costs of for the devotees. And they've been seen to very helpfully to serving the ISKCON Vaishnavas who've gone there. So that's been a very welcome service. But large scale, I think we can say that not all that much has been done. But I would suggest that seeing to the welfare of the Vaishnavas is a proper use of the impulses of compassion that have in the past been directed toward feeding the poor, rushing to disaster areas to take care of the victims of earthquakes and cyclones and floods. That impulse is very good. And if we can direct that toward the service of the Vaishnavas, then it becomes Vaishnava Seva. As Srila Prabhupada wrote to Giriraj Maharaj, when we do that, go to the poor areas and so on, that becomes karmakanda. And karmakanda is to be avoided. Karmakanda, gyanakanda, kevala vishayabandha. Two pots of poison, karmakanda, gyanakanda. Gyanakarmadhyanavritam. We don't want to become karmakandis. But Vaishnav seva, just the opposite. Vaishnav seva is the source of liberation or the source of devotional service. So that serving impulse is there, that compassionate impulse is there, as various people have written to me at times, that there are so many sincere devotees who are working with their full energy to help the poor, to help these disaster-stricken people, and don't you have any feeling, and so on. So the impulse is there to render compassionate service. And my suggestion is that that impulse should be directed toward our own members, toward the Vaishnava devotees of the Lord. There are elderly people, there are sick people, there are widows, there are orphans, there are people in difficult situations, and they'll be there more and more as our society matures as a as an institution, or as our communities mature. Those needs will be there, and those Vaishnavas are the proper object of service. In the future also, this is something of a prediction, that if we neglect these matters, I suspect that there'll be a wave of resentment as devotees in need realize or discover that the same ISKCON that's raised hundreds of thousands of dollars to mount high-profile efforts to help the poor and the needy is unprepared to do anything for them. I think that that could provoke a considerable amount of resentment, so that the same thing that we're doing now is, you know, good work and helping people and so on, could later seem to be a very misdirected and misconceived use of our energy. And so it's my suggestion that some devotees at least should give their attention toward channeling proper resources for these matters, planning in responsible ways. There are resources available. Devotees themselves have money. Srila Prabhupada pointed out, himself set the lead of asking the father of this devotee girl in Boston that it would be very good for him to contribute money. We have large communities of people who have various kinds of skills in medical field and other such fields who could be engaged, and in some places are engaged, in helping to see to the welfare of ISKCON devotees. And in various places, local governments and so on also offer resources which one can use if one knows how to do it, if one is alert to these things. So as there's a field that's been developed for charitable activities directed elsewhere, similar energy could be invested in charitable activities directed toward the Vaishnav devotees. And I would suggest that to be a very good use of our energy. Are there any questions? Yes. Yeah, send that mic back.
It's more like a commentary, but like myself, I got very looking about my old age, my pension, or whatever. I'm just concentrating myself on preaching Krishna consciousness and helping the mission. So that I have some faith myself that Krishna will take care of the leader. I don't know, I don't want to speak for others, but I could imagine that some devotees would worry about. No, and they see that there will be no preparations for them for later. Then they have to worry. Then they worry because, like, they're going to put their practice and they're going to work, they put their attention to saving money for their old days. Mm-hmm. So, what do you think about this?
First of all, I think that you're right that as devotees, although I've urged that there should be organized efforts within ISKCON to see to these things, ultimately we depend on Krishna. As Srila Prabhupada pointed out elsewhere, that if Krishna wants to save you, nobody can kill you. And if Krishna wants to kill you, no one can save you. You can call in the best medical teams from all over the world, and if Krishna doesn't desire, you'll not survive. And on the other hand, if Krishna desires, you may have the worst problem, and without any proper attention, you'll do fine. So ultimately we depend on Krishna. That's a fact. And I'm following that policy somehow or other. I have no savings. Somehow or other, Krishna's always sending whatever I need. If I need some medical attention, somehow it's coming. And if we have that dependency, then Krishna will respond. That's a fact. Now, when we come to those who are householders, it's hard for me to comment, but Srila Rupa Goswami did set aside 25% of his savings against emergency, and Srila Prabhupada cited that as a standard for householders, that it's not wrong for householders to set aside something against emergency needs. I'm not an expert on household management by any means, nor financial management, but I don't think I'd find fault with any householder who, considering future needs, put money aside for that. I wouldn't count that as, well, you're not depending on Krishna, Prabhu. That's also dependence on Krishna, to apportion your funds wisely and yes, to apportion your funds wisely. For sannyasis and brahmacharis, there are no funds. They're not supposed to have funds. Brahmachari is not supposed to keep money, and sannyasi is not supposed to keep money. Prabhupada said you should make $1 million and spend $1 million every day so that the next day you're penniless. That's good. And the vanaprasthas also are not supposed to have money. It's not that they leave home with a lot of cash in their pockets and go off to the forest. They're not supposed to have money either. So the people who have money are the householders. The householders are in the business of having money. Supposed to be. So it's a great responsibility on the householders. It's a great responsibility on the householders. That they... this is householder life. That one-fourth of the society has to support three-fourths of the society. The householders are responsible not only for the householders, but for the brahmacharis, for the vanaprasthas, and for the sannyasis. That's their duty as householders. Because brahmachari is not making any money. But they go from house to house, and the householders see to giving them. They're like the children of the householders. And the sannyasis are also the children of the householders. They're also the children of the householders. And vanaprasthas similarly, because after all, the householder at one time was supposed to have been a brahmachari, and in the future he should accept the vanaprastha ashram and then sannyas. So really he's giving to himself in one sense. That is, the ashrams that he's giving to are the ashrams that he's either been in or going to be in. So that responsibility comes upon him, not when he's a child and not when he's retired or elderly, but it comes upon him in that earning period of his life during the householder ashram. So that's a responsibility of the householders. I know that most of our householders are not very much well-to-do. Our extended community perhaps has householders who are able to participate in these sort of things. And with some organization, they will. If there are funds organized for these various necessities, than those who have money, and we have in our extended community people who are quite able to contribute. And if, just as they're giving now for disasters in Gujarat or floods in Orissa, they would give for these causes also if proper attention is given. And it's not wrong for us to use money in that way, either for our own families or for the society. Is that okay? But Krishna, finally, Krishna consciousness does mean Rakshasyati iti vishvasho, to have faith that Krishna will take care of me, that I don't have to worry, organization, no organization, funds or no funds. Krishna is there. He'll do whatever is good for me. Yes?
There are many times when people, when they're unable to take care of themselves, you know, they will simply pass to death.
When people, in old Vedic times, when people were unable to care for themselves, they simply fasted to death. I think that's an oversimplification. It's not that every person who was unable to care for himself simply fasted to death. That might have been, that sounds like a convenient social arrangement. But I think it's, first of all, not historically, doesn't historically correspond to the facts, and is probably not the kind of wishful thinking we should do. There were people who, at the last stage, would do that. Now, people become, at a certain point of their life, unproductive. They become unproductive. It doesn't mean they're ready for death. But they can't go out. We're used to people being very productive on Sankirtan. They go out and do 100 books a day, 200 books a day. And it comes to a time when they can't go out, maybe at all. And then it comes to a time when, you know, they can't really do that much service in the temple either. They just, you know, they can string a few flower garlands or whatever it is. And they can chant their rounds and take prasadam. They can't do that much. It's not that everybody, now Prabhupada up till his last day was doing something. But it doesn't happen that way all the time. Janma mrityu jara vyadhi, old age is not always, doesn't always consist of being clear and clear-headed and able-bodied till the end. There are these long, slow declines where you can do less and less and less and less. So people become simply unproductive, not ready for death, but On the spreadsheet, they become a financial deficit instead of a financial asset. That's different from dying, but it just means you're not bringing in money anymore. And in the materialistic world, of course, it's described in third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Lord Kapiladeva says that when the old father becomes unproductive like that, then he's neglected by his family members, like an old ox that can't work anymore. Or we see among the karmis when the animal is old and can't give milk or whatever, they just kill it. They just kill it. And that's there because it's a financial loss. And there are some societies, Prabhupada mentions, where they have the same solution for their grandfathers. When the grandfathers becomes unproductive, too old, then they hunt him down and slice him up and have a love feast. So these are some innovative financial solutions to this problem. But they seem to be contraindicated for Vaishnavas. So we can expect that there will be people who will live and live, and they'll not be productive. Oh, I can give you the Vedic system was not that they were just said, okay, now the time's come, you can go ahead and fast. But they were taken care of by the responsible people. Particularly in family life, it's the responsibility of the son to see to the welfare of the parents. In fact, in India, so many times we have boys who just cannot join our society. And when you ask, well, why not? Oh, I have to take care of my parents. You know, they're the only son or they're the eldest son. And that value is very strongly instilled in them, that I have to take responsibility for my parents. And that's human life. In our Western culture, we're used to the idea that, you know, somehow or other, you know, now I've got my life and they've got their life, and if there's some difficulty, then maybe you try to arrange for them to be put in an institution someplace where they'll be properly cared for. But that's kind of as far as it goes. And it's a pain, it's a bother, you don't really want to have to do it, but, you know, every 4 months or so, you've got to go out there and check on how they're doing and, you know, whatever it is, and you pay, you write the checks, and, you know, that's about as far as it goes. In the Vedic culture, it wasn't like that. The elderly people were taken care of by the family members.
Just as a standard example in present-day India, I have my B2G publisher, Yudhisthira Prabhu, who's our Radhanath Maharaj's disciple. And he's living with his two children, his wife, his mother, and his grandmother. And he's taking care of all of them. He's taking care of all of them. Grandmother is a very elderly lady, and, you know, she chants, and she does whatever she does, but, you know, she's frail and elderly. But she's as much a member of the family as his wife is or as his children are, and he's taking nice care for everybody. That's actually the Vedic system. In the Vedic system, not only vertically, you know, your parents and your grandparents and your children, but horizontally also. If there was some sister, for example, who's not married or her husband had died or whatever, then the elder brother has to take the responsibility for the sister also. Somebody has to take responsibility for everybody. That human life means responsibility. Family life means responsibility. So everyone has to take responsibility for someone. And responsibility means that difficulty. And sometimes it's great, you know, your kids are doing fine and your wife is doing fantastic and your mother is helping cook. But sometimes it's not like that. Sometimes it's just troublesome, burdensome, difficult. And still they take the responsibility. That's responsibility, that even when I like it or I don't like it. You know, we all like to take responsibility and get the, you know, be known as the guy who's leading. But sometimes responsibility is a drag. It's a drag on our resources, on our energy, on our, you know, it's a burden. But responsibility means that I accept that burden. Not just that when something's fun or profitable, I do it. And when it's unprofitable or unappealing, then I say, well, somebody else can do this. Responsibility means that if it's my duty, I do it. Vedic whole culture, whole Vedic culture is duty. Varnashram dharma. Dharma means duty. Or varnashram or no varnashram, we just speak of dharma generally. Dharma means duty, but varnashram dharma means systematic duty according to your position in society. If you're sannyasi, you have these duties. If you're brahmachari, you have these duties. If you're a vanaprastha, you have these duties. If you're a grihastha, you have these duties. And duty means you have to do it. People were so dutiful. We have the example of Maharaj Runti Dev. He was approached, he was fasting, and then he was approached by different people, please give me little something. And at the end he had practically nothing, but he was giving, because it was his duty. Maharaj Dasarath banished Lord Ramchandra to the forest, because it was his duty. King Shibi was ready to sacrifice his flesh to save a pigeon. You know this story? The pigeon took shelter of the king. He was being chased by an eagle. Took shelter of the king. Please protect me. Yes, I'll protect you. Then the eagle said, you're protecting the pigeon, but he's my food. What am I going to do? And the king said, yes, I'll give you from my body the equivalent weight. Because it's my duty. Then the pigeon was weighed, but he kept getting heavier and heavier and heavier. Finally, the king put his whole body on the scale. Then the pigeon and eagle revealed that they were two demigods, Indra and somebody else. But because it was his duty, he was ready to give his whole body. That's Vedic culture, duty. So it was dependable in that now things are gradually deteriorating. But still in India, that sense of duty is very strong. And especially in family affairs, to take care of the daughter and see that she's properly married, to take care of the son, see that he's fixed up, to take care of the parents. Such strong sense of duty is there. Prabhupada said, dead or alive, an elephant is worth a lakh. So Vedic culture, even in its present debilitated position, still we have so much to learn from it. We can see how dutiful the Vedic culture is. Not just that we say, all right, you're old, time for you to fast to death. But the elderly people, at a certain time, they might do that. The Pandavas saw, okay, time has come. They just marched off to the Himalayas. Marching off to the Himalayas means death. There's no food there. There's ice. There's snow. You just keep marching. And finally, you're going to be finished. So there was that. Not only the Pandavas, others, they used to see. Now it's over. We might as well go. And it's known, even among the Karmis, they sometimes recognize that now I'm going to die. I'm not going to eat anymore. They have that intelligence also. My uncle recently died, and he, at a certain point, he just stopped eating. He refused to eat. He was. Then somehow his daughters came, please, please. So somehow or other they got him to agree, and then he died again. He finally died sometime later, not much later. But that impulse is there. That now I'm going to die. Why eat? Why eat? Why do anything? Just go. So that's natural in a sense. That's natural. But not that those of us who are here can think, well, okay. Any other question? Mm-hmm. Millions of questions. Okay. For anyone who wants to do some service, big service, this is a whole field where there's lots to be done. Anyone who has some experience in these matters or some impulse in these matters to do something, big field for devotional service, Vaishnava Seva. We've talked about different kinds of welfare work. And now I'd like again to emphasize what Srila Prabhupada considered most important. We read in Nectar of Devotion earlier that Krishna consciousness is the best welfare activity for all living beings. Srila Prabhupada was commenting on Bhagavad Gita 5.25. The purport there is very relevant. The verse says, one who is beyond duality and doubt, whose mind is engaged within, who's always busy working for the welfare of all sentient beings, and who is free from all sins, achieves liberation and supreme. Purport Prabhupada says, only a person who is fully in Krishna consciousness can be said to be engaged in welfare work for all living beings. And Prabhupada says, yes, you can open a hospital for the human being, but where is your hospital for the tiger? Can any man open the hospital for the tigers, for the snakes? And why not? You're compassionate with the living entities. Are they not living entities? This is the frailty of imperfect knowledge. The purport continues, the sufferings of humanity are due to forgetfulness of Krishna. As the supreme enjoyer, the supreme proprietor, and the supreme friend. Therefore, to act to revive this consciousness within the entire human society is the highest welfare work. A person engaged only in administering to the physical welfare of human society cannot actually help anyone. Temporary relief of the external body and the mind of the living entity is not satisfactory. The real cause of his difficulties in the hard struggle for life may be found in his forgetfulness of his relationship with the Supreme Lord. When a man is fully conscious of his relationship with Krishna, he is actually a liberated soul, although he may be in the material tabernacle. The Prabhupada comments, so please try to push on this movement as far as possible. That is our duty. In Srimad Bhagavatam, in the fourth canto, there's a verse, Bhakti Krishne Deya Jivesh Vakunta Gyanam Atmani Yari Syad Atmano Bhuyad Apavargas Tusamsrite. If a living entity is developed in Krishna consciousness, and is merciful to others, and if his spiritual knowledge, he will immediately attain liberation from the bondage of material existence. Prabhupada says, in this verse, the words dayaji veshu, meaning mercy to other living entities, indicate that a living entity must be merciful to other living entities if he wishes to make progress in self-realization. This means he must preach this knowledge after perfecting himself and understanding his own position as an eternal servant of Krishna. Preaching this is showing real mercy to living entities. Other types of humanitarian work may be temporarily beneficial for the body, but because a living entity is spirit soul, ultimately one can show him real mercy only by revealing knowledge of his spiritual existence. Then there's another quotation from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. This was, I don't know where it's from, but it appeared on the back cover of this year's Vyas Puja booklet for Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur that was published by the Sri Saraswati Gaudiya Vaishnava Association, which is an association of Vaishnavas headed up by ISKCON in the Mayapur area. Vaishnavas from all different Gaudiya Mutts and so on. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, even to rescue one person from the material energy, Mahamaya, is far more benevolent than opening innumerable hospitals. And so I have a quotation from Jagadhatri Devi Dasi, which appears in Srila Prabhupada Lilamrita about her realization. When I was distributing Prabhupada's books, I understood that that was the most pleasing thing I could do for him. I was helping him to fulfill his spiritual master's instructions, and so he was pleased. And he was even more pleased if I did it nicely. I always used to hear the story about how Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati would be happy if someone went out and distributed even one magazine, because it's actually the mood of Sankirtan, of going out and trying to give mercy to the conditioned soul. That's what counts. I always wanted to do welfare work. I like the feeling of doing something for people. So this is the summum bonum of helping people. You are helping them go back to Godhead. So that was my motivation, and we automatically become purified by bringing other living entities to Krishna. Nice realization. This is the mood of the devotee. How to bring someone, even one person, to Krishna consciousness. Then there's a letter of January 1973, which I'm going to end with. This was written to Ramachar Maharaj. So I'm so much pleased upon, so this must have been right after the Christmas marathon, actually, because it's January 1973, January 9th. I'm so much pleased upon all of the boys and girls in Los Angeles and all over the world who are understanding and appreciating this unique quality of our transcendental literature, and voluntarily they are going out to distribute despite all circumstances of difficulty. By this effort alone, they are sure to go back to home, back to Godhead. In order to change this materialistic society and prevent them from gliding to hell, first thing is to educate them. All decent men want to give service to humanity. Only thing is, they do not have information. Really, what is that service? Hospitals, feeding the poor, Red Cross, these are service to the bodies only, not to the man. Service to humanity means jnana. By giving people knowledge, jnana, that is the highest service to humanity. So we are performing the actual welfare work of society by informing everyone through our literatures who is God, who they are, and what is the relationship. In this way, everyone who hears our message gets the opportunity to fulfill his actual position as human entity and become delivered from the clutches of Maya. So you may understand it that by disseminating our Krishna consciousness propaganda anywhere and everywhere, by selling books, by making publicity, newspapers, television, so many ways there are to spread Krishna consciousness information, you may know it that by utilizing our energy in this way to give everyone access to the absolute truth, that is the real understanding of desire to serve humanity. That's all I have to say. If there are any questions, please feel free to ask them.
Yes, where is that microphone?
In order to, I mean, by the way, I'm doing food full time, so I found do you have something I have already told?
You had some?
Financial
problems.
We set up separate charities.
Set up?
Separate charities.
Separate charities.
So we are now registered as a, some kind of charity. In order to get money, to get food. So maybe 10-20% of this money is sent here for this purpose, to these people in the street. I mean, most of the money goes right to fishing for music and so on. So there are different foods and different foods. So just your opinion about how this activity can be changed.
It can be.
Government.
I don't think it would be appropriate for me to comment about it, because I don't think it would be appropriate for me to give an opinion about it, because I'm not intimately familiar with the program. I know some of the things that they're doing, some very nice work that's being done, but like in business, you have a person like an organizational auditor who comes in and looks at every aspect of a program that you're doing and then says, well, your record keeping could be improved, or your manpower could be better used this way, or whatever it may be. But for me, from a distance, not ever having interviewed Parshuram Prabhu about what he's doing, not ever having examined your structure and your activities, for me to stand up here in front of everyone and say, well, I think they should do this, or I think they should do that, I think it would be presumptuous of me. All I would say is that you've attended this course now. You have perhaps some information that might be of value to you, some instructions from Srila Prabhupada that might be of value to you. And you can share that with whoever you're working with, and together with your own intelligence, see how to apply these instructions. I don't claim to be a great manager or ISKCON, the person who knows how ISKCON should do everything right. You have intelligence, you have dedication, you're sincere. So all I'm doing is supplying a little bit of information that may not always be highlighted, that may not always be brought to the forefront, that I think has been downplayed or forgotten or lost in the shuffle somehow, and I'm bringing it to the surface. So now, a few opinions and comments from me of a basically philosophical nature. So take that with you back to wherever you're going and apply it in your own sphere, using your intelligence and trying with full sincerity to follow and implement Srila Prabhupada's instructions. Is that okay? It's not as okay as I come in there and say, well, you do this with this program and that with that program, but I'm not qualified to do that.
You cannot call food for life or
Yeah, okay. I mean, that's, whether we can call it ordinary welfare activities or not depends on the situation. It may be somewhat better than ordinary activity. Prabhupada called it karmakanda. Not food for life, but he said if you just go out and feed the poor people, that's karmakanda. So karmakanda means ordinary mundane activities. And Prabhupada said it can become that. So it's not my saying, but Prabhupada said it can become karmakanda, which means ordinary mundane activities. Now whether food for life in any given place consists of ordinary mundane activities is for you to look at and determine, those who are involved with the program or those who are observing the program. But I'm not going to give a blanket judgment. Food for life is karmakanda. Food for life is transcendental. Food for life is a mixture. It's not for me to say. I'm just giving the information here, and you apply it to whatever program, under whatever name, in whatever part of the world it may be, and use your intelligent understanding and discrimination to see what's what. And don't look to me to be the person who, I set up a chart here and I say, okay, UK Food for Life program, all right, they get an 80%. And the Alachua Food for, they get a 90%. And this one over here, oh, they get a 20%. They're really mundane. And this, I'm not going to do that. I'm not the judge and the jury and all of that. I'm just the person who's giving out information. That's my job. I make some suggestions, but I'm not going to, certainly not going to presume to pass judgment on the service that other people are doing. Otherwise, they come to me and they look at my service and say, well, that page he edited pretty well. I give him an 80, and that page, he kind of botched that one. I give him a 20, and he published it on the internet. Well, page 42, I just give Jayadvaita Swami a 20 for the way he edited that page because this sentence doesn't read that smoothly. And I come back, I say, well, food for life, And then we all have something to say about everybody's service, mostly negative. That's not going to help inspire our Krishna consciousness movement and spread Lord Chaitanya's mercy all over the world. But take the instructions that you've got here, encouraging prasadam distribution and encouraging that it be distributed, that prasadam be distributed in a certain context, in a certain way, and apply that in a practical way so that you can fund it, man it, do it. That's intelligence. And I'm not going to tell you how to do it, because otherwise, if I were so expert, I probably would have done it. If I were a great prasadam distributor, empowered and capable and able to bring in all that money and use it this way and that way and expert in the thing, then maybe I'd be doing that. But for me, not even to do it, what do I do for prasadam distribution? I hand out a few cookies here and there. And then for me to pass judgment on the program of somebody who's large-scale organizing programs to distribute prasadam, I have to be a real jerk, which maybe I am anyway, but I don't need to get myself in deeper hot water with that sort of thing. Is that okay? Yes, thank you, Temple.
A good learning experience to hear your presentation. I definitely learned a few things. I've taken a little skeptical stand at the beginning, and I apologize for that. It has been difficult to really provoke myself. It's really like how he presented, I provoke myself by asking some questions.
Good. The Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that the truth comes out both by positive and negative. So if there are no skeptics, then you don't really get to put your case strongly.
I feel it's a difficult subject in itself. You said just now you spoke about duty, and then you say duty in mind, but also in a horizontal way. The person, due to the intercultural dynamic, he may sense it's of his duty to have people who are not colonists, but Gujaratis. He's a Gujarati himself, and he may sense,
well, I wrote a long letter to one of my disciples about that. That maybe I should get, into that? Do I have time? Not really.
I think
We sometimes think that we have to respond to our congregation and their idea of what charity is. But really our job is to help them understand a higher sense of charity. In one sense, I'm thinking, I'm Gujarati, I have to help the Gujaratis. What is that? That's the bodily concept of life. And if I'm Gujarati, then what about me and my spiritual life? I can't help anybody. I can't help anybody. I'm going to send some food to Gujarat, this, that. They're going to die, and I'm going to die. And I'm thinking, well, I'm here in London, everything's okay. Everything's not okay. The fire is burning in your house also, Baba. So that's part of our job, not just to transfer the emergency necessities from London to Gujarat or from San Francisco to Gujarat, but to enlighten people and awaken them to this understanding. And we can direct them, that if you want to help with the emergency efforts in Gujarat, we know this organization which is doing that work, and that's a good place to give your money. All right, we may collect something also, I'm not going to say. But our real work is to enlighten them about the nature of real compassion, real human disaster, and the real need of life.
I would encourage the person who has a sensitivity to an extent on the other body of life on human sentiment. But you have to have more and more than that.
If you really feel compassion, just like Prabodhananda Saraswati says, that if you, what is that? That if you really are into logic, just apply your logic to the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. If you really have a mind for logic, just apply your logic to the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So same thing, if you really have a mind for mercy, just apply that sense of mercy to Lord Chaitanya's movement, because he's the leader of all merciful people. Mahabharanya avatar. He's the most merciful person. So if you connect your mercy with the supreme merciful, then you do the greatest merciful welfare work. Otherwise, really, you're blowing on the boil. You're not really curing the disease. You're just blowing on it, kissing it, making it feel better. So that should be our sense, that this most charitable work must be done to distribute this gift of Lord Chaitanya to the suffering living entities and get them free from birth and death. So we're at the end of our time. I don't want to cramp on Sachinandan Maharaj when he comes. So I'll just thank all of you very much. And one last request is, I think that we've brought a little prasada. Yeah. So nothing very gorgeous, but please on your way, take some Krishna prasada. Thank you all very much. Hare Krishna.